Dedicated to the survival of American democracy in an increasingly dangerous world, this is Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney, acted as Assistant Secretary of Defense for International Security Policy under President Ronald Reagan, founder and president of the Center for Security Policy in Washington, D.C., the go-to man for defense and foreign policy issues, joined by the greatest minds in the security policy business, the special forces in the war of ideas at Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney.
Welcome to Secure Freedom Radio. This is Frank Gaffney, your host and guide for what I think of as an intelligence briefing on the war for the free world. A place about which we certainly need intelligence at the moment is France, a country that has, for the past week, been very, very directly under siege. It has been attacked a week ago today with murderous effects on something like 129 people. There have been, in the aftermath, a number of other repercussions, and I'm very pleased to say we're going to talk about all of this for a full hour with one of the most thoughtful and insightful observers of the scene in France I've had the privilege of knowing for now some time. He is Michel Garfinkel. He is the founder and president of the Jean-Jacques Rousseau Institute in France, a Shulman Ginsberg Fellow at the Middle East Forum here in the United States, the editor of emeritus of a French conservative news weekly, Valeurs Actuelles, contributes to Commentary and PJ Media, and is the author of some 8 books on geopolitics, and always a welcome guest. Michel, I am so sorry that it is on the occasion of so much difficulty and danger for your country, but I'm always grateful for your time and particularly anxious to gain from you insights as to what has happened in France, but what it might mean for the rest of us as well. Welcome back, sir. Good to have you with us.
Hello.
Let me ask you about, well, if you will, just where you were when you learned of the attacks a week ago in Paris, and what you made of the news as it broke.
Well, when I was not aware for a while of what was going on because I was having dinner with my family, and it's only at about around midnight that one guest we had at home and who had just left came back and told us Paris is in a state of war. There have been shooting all over the city, and there is a mass killing at Bataclan, a theater in central Paris, and a curfew has been declared. So, of course, that person had to stay with us overnight, and this is how we learned about this incredible situation. The Islamist terrorist, and especially the Islamic State, had singled out France as a target for many reasons. There had been several statements by the spokesman for Islamic State. His name is Mohammed al-Adnani. He made several statements saying that he would simply wreak havoc in France soon. Then there were a lot of statements from the French government itself, both the Prime Minister Manuel Valls and the Minister of the Interior Bernard Cazeneuve. Repeatedly said that the level of threat was very high in France, and they made such statements after the first wave of terror, which occurred, as you may remember, last January, when several jihadists killed no less than 17 people in Paris, including the editorial board of a satirical news magazine called Charlie Hebdo. Even more tellingly, Judge Trevidic, who Carr was in charge of the anti-terrorist investigations in France, and who resigned last September after 10 years in mission. Well, Trevidic made, at the very moment he left his functions, he made granted an interview to the press where he said that something big was going to happen in France.
And I want to just ask you about several things that have happened since this took place a week ago. And that is, for starters, the evidence that someone, at least one of the perpetrators, may have been in France under the pretense that he was a refugee from Syria. He may or may not have been from Syria, but what has this done?
There is no solid evidence so far that a Syrian refugee was involved. What we know is that documents about a Syrian refugee were found, but it's difficult to ascertain whether they are true or true documents or fake documents. So we don't know so far. What we know is that those people that have been identified, those jihadis that have been identified, are either French-born or Belgian-born Muslims of North African ascent. So this is what we know for sure for the time being. And we know that they have been in touch with people from France or Belgium who have volunteered for the Islamic State and who presently are living, or who currently are living in Syria and Iraq with the Islamic State.
Let me ask you, Michel Gerfinkel, about that, because this is a matter of considerable interest, I think, to many Americans. The presence in your own country of individuals and, for that matter, mosques and other institutions that may be breeding grounds for, or at least facilitators of, this kind of jihadism, as you call it, is, of course, something that is not unique to France. It may be acute there at the moment. But especially, if you would, talk a little bit about Saint-Denis and this area in which these folks were operating, and whether it represents a very different kind of problem than that might be coming in.
This is indeed a very important dimension of the problems that we are facing now, both in France and in Europe at large. There is now a very important Muslim community, both in France and in other important countries in Europe. And there is evidence that at least elements of that community are linked in one way or the other with jihadism and with radical Islam. Now, the problem is compounded by the fact that the very size of the Muslim community is, in fact, intimidating the government, both in France and in other countries in Europe and at European Union level, because people are terribly afraid of a situation that would degenerate into a kind of civil war between Muslims and non-Muslims. On the face of it, in France, France is a nation of 67 million inhabitants. So on the face of it, only 9 to 10% of the population is Muslim nowadays. But when you look at the generational brackets, you realize very quickly that the younger the global population, the larger the share of Muslims.
Yeah. Michel, hold that thought. I want to come back to that very point when we come back with you for our second segment with Michel Gerfinkel of the Jean-Jacques Rousseau Institute in Paris. It is a very, very important point, what you're getting at in terms of the demographics as well as the political implications of all this. We'll visit with you on that point and more right after this.
Visit us at facebook.com/securefreedom with Frank Gaffney.
Over the past decade, while the American military and intelligence community have been engaged in a kinetic war overseas against a wide array of enemies aligned with the global jihadist movement, the Center for Security Policy has consistently shed light upon a dark and subversive effort that thrives nearly unopposed right here in this country, the one known by the Muslim Brotherhood as Civilization Jihad. In an effort to educate freedom-loving Americans about Civilization Jihad and how it has been waged against every facet of American civilization, the Center for Security Policy has, in 2015, begun publishing a series of monographs called the Civilization Jihad Reader Series. The first of these monographs is entitled Sharia in American Courts, and it documents how Sharia, divine Islamic law, which animates the global jihadist movement, has entered our very own court system. In this study, the Center documents how parties to litigation in American appellate courts have attempted to use Sharia to resolve 146 cases in 32 different states, potentially threatening the constitutional rights of our citizens, particularly women and children. The monograph not only highlights these cases, but the organizations here in America that are actively and successfully working to insinuate Sharia into our judiciary. Finally, it provides information on at least one antidote to this infirmity, a law that has been adopted in 8 states, one that protects our citizens against the use of foreign law and upholds our Constitution as the supreme law of the land, lest those who fight to defend our Constitution overseas do not come home to see it subordinated in a courtroom in their own home state. Learn more by reading Sharia in American Courts, which can be found on Amazon.com or the Center for Security Policy's website at www.securefreedom.org.
Hi, this is Frank Gaffney. My day job is running the Center for Security Policy, which each weeknight brings you this program. But Secure Freedom Radio is just one of the important contributions the Center makes to the common defense. We call our team the Special Forces in the War of Ideas. Like the real Special Forces, we strive to be agile, creative, and highly effective in identifying threats to our country and how they might best be countered. We can't do all this without you, though. Also, like the real Special Forces, ours need ammunition. And in the war of ideas, ammo is money. The Center is a nonprofit, tax-exempt organization. Contributions to its work are tax-deductible and an important investment in your security and freedom. Find out more about the Center for Security Policy and how you can help keep its Special Forces team in the fight by visiting securefreedom.org. Many thanks.
I'm Jared Ogden, former Navy SEAL and member of Team Military on National Geographic Channel's Ultimate Survival Alaska. I want to tell you about an issue that you probably haven't heard much about. Thousands of America's veterans are suffering from occupational and environmental exposures that they were exposed to while serving in the military. We call these the toxic wounds of war. From Agent Orange and Gulf War illness to post-9/11 burn pit exposure and heavy metals in the air, and other toxic exposures that we don't fully understand. The Sergeant Sullivan Center is a powerful voice in our nation's capital, standing watch over these forgotten wounded. These men and women can't do it alone, and they need your help today. Every dollar raised by Sergeant Sullivan Center goes to medical research, public awareness, and advocacy. You can make a tax-deductible donation today at www.sergeantsullivancenter.org. That's SGTSullivanCenter.org.
This is Frank Effney. You're listening to AM 1260, The Answer.
You're listening to Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney from the nation's capital in Washington, D.C.
We're back. We're joined by Michel Gerfinkel, a friend and colleague from France, where he runs the Jean-Jacques Rousseau Institute, which he founded. He is a man of many parts, including a Shulman Ginsberg Fellow at the Middle East Forum and a contributor to numerous publications, including in this country, Commentary and PJ Media. And just before the break, Michel, you were talking about kind of the demographic implications, both in terms of sheer numbers and particularly in terms of the younger cohort that happens at this point now to be Muslim and mostly foreign-born. Describe what the implications are as you see it.
When we look at the generational cohorts, we find that the younger the population, the larger the share of Muslims. When we reach that cohort of French citizens that are under the age of 24, the proportion is not anymore 10%, but closer to 20%, and might be growing. And in some cities, we have even much higher proportion, something like 30 to 50% of the population in that cohort, generational cohort. And that has implications because if we turn into a situation, of civil war, of religious and ethnic civil war, the ratio is not one Muslims versus nine non-Muslims, non-Muslim French. The ratio is rather one against four, or even in many big cities, one against two or one against one.
Our guest is Michel Gerfinkel. He is joining us from Paris, where he lives and works as the founder and president of the Jean-Jacques Rousseau Institute. And I must say, Michel, I suspect very few in our listening audience have really contemplated what you've just been talking about. But obviously you have, and I imagine others in France are, especially at a moment when you see, you know, this incursion in force by, I believe, French military, certainly military police personnel, to try to apprehend or at least neutralize individuals believed to have been associated with the attacks of a week ago. Give us a flavor of what this demographic, well, reality for France means, especially as it relates to what have been called, rightly or wrongly, no-go zones. I think the technical term for it in French is zones urbaines sensibles, if I'm not mistaken, sensitive urban zones. What are those about, and what do they mean in terms of this potential threat of civil war?
Well, we have reached a situation where clearly, again, one segment, but that might be a considerable segment of the Muslim community in France, has more or less declared independence from the French nation, the French society, the French state. The no-go zones are a reality. I was astonished to find recently in Le Monde, which is a liberal newspaper in France, a story by Christine Angot, who is, again, a very liberal novelist. And she told the following story. She was visiting the place in central France where she was born and where she had lived as a child, and this city Châteauroux has been turned into a Muslim city, or at least some parts of it have been turned into Muslim neighborhoods. And in fact, when she came with a TV crew to just to shoot a kind of TV movie about a childhood, they had in fact to negotiate with the powers that be, because this neighborhood has been turned into a no-go zone, and it was very difficult for the TV crew to operate, especially when the people there, the local people, realized that the director, the television director that was following Christine Angot, was of Jewish origin. And this is a story, again, by a very liberal novelist published in a liberal newspaper. It tells you a lot about the true situation of France.
And Michel, let me just ask you on that point, though. Is it not just, disturbing, I think was the word you used, but actually dangerous for individuals, whether they're women? I don't know whether she was wearing a head covering or otherwise dressed modestly.
No, she was obviously coming in, you know, quite innocently to a place that she, well, the place she was born and she had been brought up at, you know, and she was completely astonished to realize what had happened.
Did she feel at risk, though, as well as, you know, finding the powers that be or not the authorities of France?
She said that she felt at risk, and so did the entire TV crew that was working with her, trying to shoot a movie about her.
And let me just ask, in that regard, Michel, is this a one-off kind of experience, or do you feel as though France has kind of accommodated itself to this reality of these unassimilated Muslim populations?
As I was saying, there is evidence that government, both in France and in other countries, is simply afraid of the consequence of, let's call it, a frontal collision with these Muslim enclaves. And this is one reason why there has been so much, I would say, passivity or appeasement towards radical Islam in most European countries. Now, we have figures about how the Muslims in France, in fact, define themselves and what their views are about French or European society. A very in-depth investigation was conducted last year and published last year, on December 1st last year, about French public opinion, sector by sector. And one of the sectors was the Muslim community. So what we know now is that there are three groups within the Muslim community. One group describes itself as fully observant, a second group as believers, people who believe in Islam and in God, but might not be 100% strict in religious observance.
Yeah, what I call Sharia adherents.
Yes. And then you have a third group of people who describe themselves as French citizens of Muslim origin.
Michel, but again, pause with me, please, and let's come back to that and what the implications of those three groups are for France and, frankly, for the rest of us. That and more with Michel Garfinkel of the Jean-Jacques Rousseau Institute right after this.
Visit us at facebook.com/securefreedom with Frank Gaffney.
America's injured and critically ill service members face incredible challenges every day of their lives. Since 2004, the Semper Fi Fund has helped thousands of service members and their families with both immediate and long-term needs. Join the Semper Fi Fund in supporting American heroes. They've given so much. Now it's our turn. Learn how your tax-deductible donation makes a real difference in their lives at SemperFiFund.org.
This is Frank Affney with the Secure Freedom Minute. Yesterday, a large bipartisan majority of the House of Representatives voted to protect American communities from the possibility that President Obama's bid to bring tens of thousands of Syrians into this country as refugees won't simply add to our population of jihadists. The question occurs, do legislators really want to take such an important first step, or simply deflect popular demands for such protection? We'll know soon. Newly installed House Speaker Paul Ryan will either give teeth to yesterday's vote or render it toothless in action on an upcoming spending bill. In addition to establishing whether we will wind up admitting Syrian Islamic supremacists determined to destroy us, Speaker Ryan's decision may determine the duration as well as the quality of his leadership. The public wants no more of meaningless symbolic votes followed by actions that negate them. Does Paul Ryan? This is Frank Gaffney.
They are fathers and mothers, someone's best friend, and America's true heroes. Whether out on the front lines or here on the home front, our troops are sacrificing every day, making sure that we continue to have the freedoms that make this country great.
Hi, I'm Congressman Chris Stewart. As a former Air Force pilot, I understand that our troops and their families continue to give so much for our country. Let them know you appreciate their service. A simple thank you can go a long way.
Brought to you by the National Association of Broadcasters and this station.
Secure Freedom announces the launch of our newest initiative, the Counter Jihad Campaign at counterjihad.com. We have gathered some of the foremost experts and activists to begin our fight back against those who long ago declared war on us. You can see our first two ads asking those who see something bad happening, like the attack in Garland, Texas, or the dozen jihadists at the Boston Marathon Killers Mosque, to say something. Join us and be a part of the Counter Jihad.
When we decided to rename this radio station, we came up with one word, one very big word, answer. That's because we know our listeners better than anybody. We know you wake up every day with an insatiable appetite for news and information. But more than that, you want to know what to make of it all. That's why we're here.
Do this better than any station in town.
Welcome aboard. AM 1260, The Answer.
This is Fred Fleitz with the Center for Security Policy. October 18th marked an important date for the nuclear deal with Iran. On this date, Adoption Day, the U.S. and the EU had to affirm that they will lift sanctions when the IAEA certifies that Iran has met several easy-to-meet requirements, probably later this year. The Iranian parliament had to agree to provisionally approve the NPT Additional Protocol, which gives IAEA inspectors greater access to Iranian nuclear sites. Meanwhile, however, Iranian leaders have made it clear they will not fully comply with the nuclear deal. Iran recently tested a long-range missile in violation of the deal. Tehran also placed some military sites off-limits to IAEA inspectors. In addition, Iran recently sent troops to Syria, probably paid for with sanctions relief from the nuclear deal. It is becoming more and more clear that critics who said last July that this deal is a sham had it exactly right. I'm Fred Fleitz. Learn more at securefreedom.org.
Now more with Frank Gaffney.
We're back. We're visiting for a full hour, I'm very pleased to say, with one of the most perspicacious observers and analysts of public policy in France. He is Michel Garfinkel. He founded and is the president of the Jean-Jacques Rousseau Institute, a conservative think tank in France. He has also been associated with the Middle East Forum here in the United States as a Shulman Ginsberg Fellow, and is also a contributor to Commentary and PJ Media here in the United States, among other publications. And Michel, you were just making a very important point about both the sort of ticking time bomb quality of this Muslim demographic within France, its sheer size, and in particular its size within younger generations. But you were also describing kind of how it parses between those that are very much Sharia adherent Muslims and those that are something else. Please finish that thought, if you would.
Yes. So what I was trying to explain is that according to figures we have, the proportion of fully observant Muslims has been growing steadily in France over the past 15 years. In fact, there were 36% of the global Muslim community in France that described themselves as fully observant 15 years ago. Today, 42%. On the contrary, those who describe themselves as French citizens of Muslim origin and who tend to be secular and to be French first and Muslim second. Those people were 25% of the community 15 years ago, and now they are only 21%. So there is a growth of the fully observant element and a decline of the more secular element, which has consequences, because the same investigation made clear that the more observant Muslims are in France, the more likely they are to entertain negative views about non-Muslims. So there is, one may safely think that the growth of observant Islam in France is creating a favorable ground for the growth of radical Islam and for jihadist organizations.
And among the non-Muslims that are particularly loathed by these Sharia-adherent Muslims, these Islamic supremacists, if you will, of course, is the subset of the European population that is Jewish. You have written extensively about the plight of Jewry in Europe these days, and including in your native France, Michel. It's my understanding that an awful lot of Jews are just fleeing the continent. Tell us what's going on that front.
Many Jews indeed are leaving France, and one reason for that is French Jews are either survivors of the Holocaust or the children of survivors, or they are people that have been expelled in the 50s and 60s and 70s from Muslim countries, or the children of people of refugees from Arab countries, which means that every Jewish person in France knows, either directly or from his parents, that for Jews, it frequently the global situation may deteriorate almost overnight. So when Jews in France and in other European countries are considering what is happening around them now, they have a feeling that it would be unwise to stay either in France or in other European countries. And this is why so many Jews today are living either for North America or for Israel.
And Michel, this is unfortunately a problem, anti-Semitism, that is now no longer confined to these jihadists, is it? It seems as though it's become increasingly de rigueur for the European Union to be expressing its hostility towards Israel, notably through things like this labeling initiative on Israeli products made in the so-called occupied territories. How does this fit into the larger trends in Europe as you see it? It seemingly is only going to reinforce the desire of Jews to leave, but what does it mean for the society more broadly as you see it?
Well, first of all, I would like to stress the fact that large sectors of European public opinion and of French public opinion are neither anti-Semitic nor anti-Israel. This is not, Europe is and is not as, I would say, globally pro-Jewish and pro-Israel as America is today, but it is not, with some exceptions, of course, it is not fundamentally an anti-Semitic place. But the problem we have is that the Europeans are a bit schizophrenic when it comes to, for instance, to Israel. They have swallowed a kind of systemic anti-Israel approach, and they simply cannot get out of it. Your computer has been hit by a kind of a virus that is affecting the entire software. So you have a problem like that. At the same time, Israel can be very popular. Many people in Europe are perfectly aware that Israel is the only democracy in the Middle East. They're perfectly aware that Israel is the startup nation. And now they are perfectly aware that the way Israel fights terrorism is in fact what Europe and France have to do just in order to survive.
You know, I wanted to ask about that because you've written, and again, our guest is Michel Garfinkel. You can find his writings at places like Valeur Actuelle and Commentaire in France, but also Commentary and PJ Media here in the United States. And you've spoken about, I don't know whether this is what, you know, is often said of liberals who've become conservative when they've been mugged by reality, but it does seem as though whether it's with respect to counterterrorism operations or whether it's more broadly with respect to what France is now doing to retaliate against the Islamic State with bombing operations in Syria, some of the previous sanctimony is giving way to a bit of hard-nosed reality and a willingness to do, well, even more, actually, than the Israelis, who've been pretty restrained with respect, say, to civilian casualties, as far as that goes. Talk about that mugged by reality feature, if you would.
You see, a main difference between the United States and Europe is that, by and large, American democracy is still a real democracy where you can express views and there is something like a debate. So you may not be happy with your present administration and so on, but you're confident that it's still possible to bring new ideas and to enter into debates and to have another administration. In Europe, things are very different because I would say that democracy has been taken over by bureaucracy. And this is one of the worst consequences of European federalism.
This is a critically important point. Michel, again, forgive me to interrupt you for one more time. We're going to break and we're going to be back with our fourth segment of this very special hour with Michel Garfinkel from Paris, talking about the attacks there, talking about the larger jihad being waged against Western civilization, in fact, the war for the free world. All that and more, straight ahead.
Go to securefreedomradio.org today. It's your freedom. It's your country. Frank Gaffney's Secure Freedom Radio.
It's been over 7 years since a church group from another state brought a couple hundred refugees to the rural county where I live. I wanted to know, how could they do this? What was the governmental process that allowed the resettlement of refugees to a county ill-prepared to assimilate them? Employment opportunities were scarce. The health department was not familiar with illnesses and mental health problems of people who came from parts of the third world. The school system was not prepared to teach large numbers of students who didn't speak English.
That's author Ann Corcoran discussing her new book, Federal Immigration Policy, Resettlement and the Hijra to America. She explains how Muslim immigrants are being quietly resettled into American towns without vetting them, even for terrorist links. Corcoran also explains how the global jihad movement is using immigration as a stealth campaign to spread its influence in America. You can read Federal Immigration Policy, Resettlement and the Hijra to America on securefreedom.org or purchase a copy on Amazon.com.
Hi, this is Frank Gaffney. My day job is running the Center for Security Policy, which each weeknight brings you this program. But Secure Freedom Radio is just one of the important contributions the Center makes to the common defense. We call our team the Special Forces in the War of Ideas. Like the real Special Forces, we strive to be agile, creative, and highly effective in identifying threats to our country and how they might best be countered. We can't do all this without you, though. Also, like the real Special Forces, ours need ammunition. And in the War of Ideas, ammo is money. The center is a nonprofit, tax-exempt organization. Contributions to its work are tax-deductible and an important investment in your security and freedom. Find out more about the Center for Security Policy and how you can help keep its Special Forces team in the fight by visiting securefreedom.org. Many thanks.
I'm Robert Muse, co-founder and senior counsel of the American Freedom Law Center, our nation's premier public interest law firm fighting for your faith and freedom in courtrooms across America. Make no mistake, we live in a pivotal time. Secular progressives such as Barack Obama and his surrogates are zealously sweeping religion from the public square, foisting Sharia law and other harmful international precedents into our courts and constitution, assaulting the traditional family, and weakening our national defense by, among other things, undermining the strength of our military through social engineering and political correctness. But I can assure you that the American Freedom Law Center is aggressively engaging our nation's enemies with offensive lawfare to defend our fundamental rights and to fight stealth jihad in all of its forms, including the civilization jihad being waged by Muslim Brotherhood front groups operating here in the U.S. Indeed, there is no other public interest law firm as uniquely qualified to fight this battle. But we need your prayers and financial support to succeed. Please consider a tax-deductible donation to support our critical fight for your faith and freedom. Visit us at www.AmericanFreedomLawCenter.org.
This is Fred Fleitz for the Center for Security Policy. The Obama administration's efforts to defend the controversial nuclear deal with Iran has become ugly, very ugly. Last week, during a speech at American University, the president portrayed opponents of the deal as partisan Republicans in common cause with Death to America chanting Iranian hardliners. The Tablet, a daily online Jewish magazine, ran an editorial on August 7th claiming that the president is using code anti-Semitic language to criticize Jewish Americans for opposing the Iran deal and to blame them if the deal is rejected by Congress. Some liberal pro-Obama groups have gone further and have questioned the loyalty to this country of Jewish members of Congress who oppose the deal, such as New York Senator Chuck Schumer. The president and his supporters are stooping to smearing opponents of the deal because the agreement is so awful and they cannot defend it on its merits. I'm Fred Fleitz. Learn more at securefreedom.org.
This is Jenny Thomas. I do video interviews of leaders with the Daily Caller. I had the privilege recently of interviewing Diana West about her extraordinary new book, American Betrayal, The Secret Assault on Our Nation's Character. You can see it at dailycaller.com. American Betrayal reads like a spellbinding historical thriller, but it is also a carefully documented account of how the U.S. government was penetrated by communist agents in the years after President Roosevelt normalized relations with the Soviet Union. Diana West shows how a similar assault is being mounted today by yet another collectivist ideology, the supremacist Islamic doctrine of Sharia. She establishes that while the communists and the Islamists may have very different visions of the world, they have employed the same techniques to defeat America. Please watch my conversation with Diana West about American Betrayal, then check out the other great leaders we profile at dailycaller.com.
Annie Soldier Incorporated was started in August 2003 as a simple family effort to help the soldiers in one Army unit, thus the name. However, due to overwhelming requests, on January 1, 2004, the Annie Soldier effort was expanded so it would include any member of any of the armed services in harm's way. Won't you please help? Find out how by going to www.anysoldier.com today.
Go to securefreedomradio.org today. It's your freedom. It's your country. Frank Gaffney's Secure Freedom Radio.
Welcome back. Our guest is Michel Gerfinkel, who has been very generous with his time. We're catching him a week after the attacks that took place last Friday in Paris, murdering some 129 people with follow-on intense firefights in one of the so-called banlieues of Paris, Saint-Denis, and so much more. And Michel, you were making a point about the cumulative effect on Europe and its democracy of kind of the strangulating bureaucracy and centralism of the European Union. Finish that thought, if you would.
I think this is very important because there are lots of questions that the Europeans cannot properly address, either because the national governments have relinquished their sovereign rights in many fields, or because at the level of the European institutions, you don't have a real debate, but there is a bureaucratic class that decides for the citizens and doesn't listen to the pleas of the citizens. So this is very, very important, and I believe that we are witnessing now a kind, not just a rebellion of in Europe against the European Union as it works now, but we have also something like a repatriation of sovereignty to the national governments. Look at France. What happens now in France? Under the state of emergency, the French government has simply retaken the sovereign rights that it had abandoned recently. Now the borders are closed again, and we don't pay attention anymore to the European guidelines in terms of civic rights and so on. Safety and public security and national defense now come first. And this is a very important fact.
Sensibly so. Do you anticipate that one of the things that will be struck down then is the sort of growing restraint on freedom of expression?
No. Well, what happens, we are free to talk. But and we will stay free to talk, I believe. But the problem is that everything has been organized in such a way that what we say is not consequential, because the political class and the political bureaucracy doesn't want to listen to us, but simply reruns constantly its own ideology. Now, I believe that the world process is coming, is reaching its end, and that after things like the Black Friday in France and other such things, there is now a reconsideration of the politics of Europe.
Well, I pray you're right. What one of the things that we've been quite concerned about, because it seems to be leaching here too, notwithstanding our First Amendment rights and freedom of expression at the core of them, is this idea that the European Union was promoting, pursuant to Human Rights Council Resolution 1618, a project of the Organization of Islamic Cooperation, as you know, Michelle, that any offensive speech about Muslims, you know, would be prohibited. And that was very troubling. And I wonder whether, you know, we've reached sort of the point at which that is over the side, too.
We have not reached that point. There was definitely an effort on the part of many political leaders to enforce such a resolution. But I believe now that everything works against such a resolution.
Well, in that spirit, then, let me just ask you in the remaining couple of minutes we have. You've touched on this in several different points of this wonderful conversation, Michelle Garfinkel. But I'd like to just draw you out on how you would characterize, particularly for those of us outside of France, those of us who have not been, you know, experiencing at least firsthand what you have of late, how you would characterize the nature of the enemy we are up against and its implications, again, not just for your own country, but really for what I call the free world more generally.
Well, I would like to express my own views, and on the one hand, there is one enemy, which is radical Islam, or if you prefer, Islamic fascism, and this is a very real enemy and a very lethal enemy. But I believe that that enemy alone could not be as dangerous as it is. It's part of a much larger image, a much larger picture. And that larger picture is a worldwide coalition of anti-Western anti-American and anti-European powers. There is an axis of the post-communist authoritarian regimes, Russia, China. There is an alliance between the Chinese, the Russians, and many Muslim countries like Iran, or with many so-called progressive countries in Latin America, like for instance Venezuela and Brazil, to a point, and so on.
Many of these share, don't they, this sort of conviction of the left that the order, the conservative order, the republics, the constitutions are you know, their adversaries as much as these jihadists. In fact, the jihadists seem to be their partners in many cases, are they not?
I believe that the real threat, the real danger, is a combination of the jihadi threat and the larger anti-Western coalition. And on that point, I specifically reject the view that that is now very popular in France and in Europe, that one should strike an alliance with Iran and the Assad regime in Syria and Hezbollah against the Islamic State. The reason why I reject that view is that there is some reason to think that the Islamic State has been, in fact, manipulated by the major players in the anti-Western coalition. We know perfectly, and there have been a lot of reports like that. I just read a report in Le Monde, again a liberal newspaper in France, that the military wing of the Islamic State in Iraq and Syria consists in fact of former officers of Saddam Hussein's army, and these people have been trained in Soviet Russia. So there is a personal link between these people and the former Soviet Union. Now we know that the former Soviet Union as a regime is back in Russia. The big mistake we made in 91 was to believe that the Soviet Union had lost the Cold War.
Michel, this is a topic for a whole other conversation, and I look forward to having it with you. The author of The Return of Russia, among his 8 books, is Michel Garfinkel, a marvelous resource for all of us, a courageous and very thoughtful analyst of the situation politically as well as geostrategically in Europe, the founder and president of the Jean-Jacques Rousseau Institute. Thank you so much for this great conversation for this hour, and we look forward to visiting with you again soon and to visiting with the rest of you again next week, Monday, same time, same station. Until then, this is Frank Gaffney. Thanks for listening.
From the nation's capital, you've been listening to Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney.